Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, Bluegrass, American Roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best in new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Morning, welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. You maybe even save it and share it further afield. It's Saturday the 25th of April 2026. If you are listening on catch up, you've got Julie and Paul here live in the studio as usual. We're here every Saturday morning from 11 until 12. Thank you to our Chris for reminding me about that time slot. And we talk about science in all its different forms, and we also play some rather cool music as well. This week is a little different though. It's a Live Science Radio Show special edition with a full hour dedicated to talking about the innovative construction and housing delivery factory in a box system. So today we also have two very special guests in the studio, not just our PG, who sat next to me. We normally actually ring him up, but he's here next to me and it's unnerving me a little bit. But we've got Richard Crosby and Professor Ben Hughes in the studio with us. Now, Richard is Chief Executive of Seismic Group. He works on improving the way buildings are delivered with a focus on making construction quicker, more reliable and better organised. He's closely associated with Seismic approach to house building and has become a recognised voice in pushing for more practical, production-led ways of meeting housing demand. Professor Ben Hughes is Professor of Energy Engineering at the University of Sheffield, hurrah, in the School of Mechanical, Aerospace and Civil Engineering. His work focuses on low-carbon energy in the built environment, including heating, cooling and energy storage. And he's part of the university team exploring new ways to deliver better homes more effectively. Special thanks, of course, must go to our Chris for arranging this interview for us, as he knows Richard Crosby. We'll be talking about that in a bit. For those who tune in regularly, you'll know that Chris Dale is normally our guest speaker every fourth Saturday of the month. And his topic has been for quite a few years now, ultra processed foods and the impact on our health, a very timely subject. Paul Gregory, as I said, is also in the studio with us. He's a founding member of the Life Science Radio Show here at Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. And he will be leading today's interview, giving me a rest, but I might chip in. You never know, Paul. So a massive welcome to Richard and Ben. Thanks so much for coming today, and we really appreciate it. And over to you, PG.
Goodness me.
Welcome, Richard and Professor Ben Hughes. Do you want to say hello?
Hello.
Hello, hello. Firstly, Richard, I have to ask you, because Chris has made me ask you, how do you know Chris Dale?
Oh, I've known Chris for about at least 10 years now. I was seconded in doing some work as a consultant through to the Department of Education, looking at how they deliver schools and build schools. And I think they realised that they needed somebody to keep an eye on me as a consultant. So Chris got that difficult task of trying to control me and what I was doing at the Department of Education. So top guy.
Brilliant. I did ask him to come and speak about building schools for the future, but I felt maybe he's still working in that field and he maybe couldn't say things he maybe wanted to say or otherwise, I don't know.
Well, I'm a bit more maverick on that,
oh,
so I can tell
indeed.
Anything.
I'm sure Chris will be listening later on.
Yeah, cringing.
But I'm going to hand you over to PG now to ask you the first questions.
Okay, welcome. And a building in a box? What's that mean?
I suppose it's a small project, really, in the scale of it, but every now and again you see on the news about the national housing shortage, and we're not immune to that in South Yorkshire. But what we are good at in South Yorkshire is manufacturing. So I think everybody knows if you want to make something, you make it in Sheffield. So we brought together some really cool experts from Seismic, from the university, from the Advanced Manufacturing Park, and said, let's manufacture a building. Let's do something that we can do quickly, scalably, cheaply, and get it into the market. So we very kindly, the South Yorkshire Combined Mayoral Authority funded us to build a demonstrator up at the Advanced Manufacturing Park, and we managed to build a house using a factory in a box in just under a week to just demonstrate how quickly and cheaply it could be done. That's the start of something big, hopefully.
Yeah, a bit of a proof about how it can be done. What about the actual components of the house? How are they constructed?
Well, we started off with steel. There's only one material when we're here in Sheffield, isn't there, in terms of doing it? And if you're going to build things in a manufacturing way, we've got to use materials that can be manufactured properly in terms of doing that with the right tolerances and can be reused more than anything else. We've got to get the green agenda in here, and there's only one way to really achieve it, and that is to make things that don't go to landfill that can be reused. So steel is absolutely at the core of what we do here.
Yeah, well, I think we've seen a lot of things in the news that other materials crop up from time to time, like the dreaded rack in the schools, which was supposed to be a great idea at the time. And I remember going around some of the local educational buildings and trying to install the huge heavy video projectors, and I found that they actually have a system of pipes with a skin on either side of it, which is not very good for bolting big heavy weights to. So a lot of playing around with that, and I think it's good that we get that idea. What about how viable it is in terms of building now? Steel frame can cause you problems because obviously there's a linkage for heat loss through that. So you've got some way of defending from that, presumably. But then the cladding, again, you know, there are horror stories of cladding in the UK. So what's different about the construction now?
Well, we're still using a lot of the same proven materials. What we're trying to do is show that there is a more simplistic way of putting the things together.
Yeah.
So we've got some big issues in the country in terms of skilled workforce to do that. People are not wanting to go into the industry. They're wanting to go do other things. I mean, construction represents about, it's worth about £170 billion a year, is the whole construction industry. And you put that into perspective of the wider economy, that's nearly 7% of GDP on an average year. So with some big stuff to go at. But we also need an additional 250,000 tradespeople.
Yes.
Coming into the industry every year just to stay still.
Yeah.
Just to put that into perspective, that's some doing. And there's a huge amount to do with regenerating and repurposing existing buildings. So they require those additional trades. So we're looking at how do we supplement those additional trades in a different way to meet that gap.
Yeah. And I think one of the key things that I noticed about the factory in a box is the box that you can build things in. So that sort of weatherproofs the process, which how big a contribution do you think that would be?
I think it's part of a bigger picture. I mean, you've seen up and down the country lots of different off-site manufacturing methods, whether it be steel frame, whether it be timber framed. And unfortunately, not many of them survive in business because of the way the construction industry is funded. You don't get paid until you sell a building. And if you're running a factory with huge overheads, it doesn't take long for you to quickly run out of cash. We've come up with a system where you can actually build on site. So number one, weather doesn't interrupt you. But number two, you're not waiting for material delays. You can get in, and the quicker you can build a frame and clad it and have a fabric, you can get finance on it. And once you can finance it, it unlocks your second building. So people misunderstand that the pace of building is to do with how quickly you can build a building. It's not. It's how quickly you can finance a building. Yeah. And what we're looking at is a way of how quickly can we get a fully watertight frame up and financed. And that's why we're looking into steel frames. That's why we're looking into weatherproofing systems. You see in the news now and again, 3D printed buildings and everything else. It scares everybody. That's not what it is. What it is how do we get something up in less than a week that's weatherproof and financeable, and that's why the steel framed. I think we were chatting a little bit off air about the financing systems, and it's all about risk. But you can finance commercial buildings which are all steel framed.
Yes.
So if we can finance a commercial building, I'm pretty sure we can finance a small small home as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great on a small home, but I guess if we talk about schools, there's the scalability of that approach. So how's that come about?
Well, we were involved with the schools originally, this is 12 years or so ago now, because the Department for Education couldn't get suppliers off their existing frameworks to build some of the schools, particularly in the southeast of England.
Yeah.
They were incredibly expensive, and the way that the funding works is that actually schools, capital funding, they get an awful lot more in the south than they do in the north, purely because of the way the construction industry calculations work, that it's more expensive to build in the south and less expensive to build in the north, so they get more money to do that, which I thought was absolutely bonkers. Why don't we make them in the north and ship them to the south? And that's what we did in many ways in terms of components. And there was lots of problems on the way to do that, and we had to come over one problem at a time to get that. But actually, when you apply it to something like school, it's a building, and it has the same problems as any other building. A building just is only differs by how you use it internally and some of the spatial arrangements, but it's a building. So why can't we apply that to other buildings? And now we're looking at residential, as we're talking about now, as well as hospitals, as well as leisure buildings and other such a thing.
Yeah, well, I think it's it really is one of those things. I think that we've got a demand for small sort of dwelling places for people, and then quickly you can turn that into a small block of flats to make much more sort of financially efficient use of the footprint. So that's why we build upwards. Is we can build a tower block on a very small footprint, which means the cost of the land's a lot easier. And I think it's a key in a lot of building nowadays is the finance system. And I don't know if you've come across the funding issues with banks, but a lot of the time banks won't lend on untested properties. And yet, if you look here in Sheffield, there are what they used to call the Vic Hallam houses, and they were built by, I think Vic Hallam started out actually building chicken coops. And then in the war, they made accommodation for troops. And after the war, then they started to make the flat-roofed Vic Hallam-type properties that you can find around Sheffield. And also, after the war, there was such a clamour for residential property that you started to see them building the prefabricated properties, which I guess is a precursor to the ideas you guys have got. And my experience of that is that they actually outlived the sort of projection of how long they would be around, but banks don't like that if they're lending money on it. So it becomes a bit of a catch-22 situation to get that. But, I mean, I think if you look at the targets the present government's setting for housing, accommodation, that is going to take one heck of an effort to achieve. I think I sort of mentioned in sort of off air that I used to work at Sheffield Hallam, and working in the TV department, one of our jobs in the year was to actually get a bricklayer into the TV studio and show students English Bond, Flemish Bond, and the ways of putting brickwork together. And sadly that declined and petered out, and I don't think it's done anymore. So I think that's part of the skills loss. I think that, again, investment in the UK petered out. The skills drifted abroad. A lot of people went out to work on the continent. So Germany, Holland benefited from our skilled labour migrating away. So this is really, I guess, a foot in the door to try and bring it back. But where should the support come from for that? Do we really look to financiers, or do we look for people like government to support it more?
There's a couple of things. I mean, I always say to people, my father was an architect, so I've been on building sites since I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. If I went on the building site today, it's exactly the same as when I went on when I was 5 years old. When I went to school, my form was in a porter cabin. Yes. And if I go to school today, there'll be a form in a porter cabin. Nothing's changed. Nothing ever changes in the construction industry.
Yeah.
And 30, 40 years ago, we brought people in to do bricklaying courses, and it was a trade, and it was fantastic. But margins have been squeezed, and AI's taken off. And kids studying now, do they want to go and work on building sites in all weathers for basically minimum wage?
Yeah.
Or do you want to get a job in tech? Yes. So I think part of the problem is that we need to adapt the way in which we build properties and make it more exciting and more interesting and more technical. And the other side of it is educating and financing. So there's two options, really. At the moment, banks, traditional mortgage lenders, want to certify all products to have a certain lifespan, 100-odd years. That'll always continue. Yeah. But do we need to have a mortgage? Mm-hmm. You know, can we not? You know, if we can build a steel-gauged framed home, fully clad and waterproof, for under £15,000, do we need a mortgage? Or can we look at another way? And what happens when you unlock people from that mortgage trap? When they've got more disposable income, what happens to the economy then? So there's a number of different ways of looking at it, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a fair point, but I'd just pick up on your original point, and fair play to you, went straight to the heart of the problem, which is the money men.
Yes.
Which usually is the case, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's an insurance, it's a who lends it, and this is really why I was very so keen to work with Sheffield University and the AMRC, because of the fantastic facilities they have there for testing.
Yes.
If you can test an aircraft, right, and how they are made and how you do that, and you can dare get on a plane with a tech, then I'm sure living in a house that's been tested to at least half that level of rigour should be pretty much safe, shouldn't it? You would like to think. Yet we have this hearts and minds problem. And, you know, you try, first question they ask when you try and insure, do your house insurance is, has it got a flat roof?
Yeah.
Well, hang on a minute, flat roofs now, they don't leak anymore like they used to do. Yes, they did once, but let's catch up a little bit. Yep. So if we can just get over that and make it sound as ridiculous as it really is on some of the technology that exists using manufactured solutions, which are actually less risky than a series of people that never met before coming together to build something traditionally, then we can smash it out of the park. So if you can jump on a plane with however many thousands of flammable liquid and fly 200 foot in the air, more than that, in the air, then you can live in a house that's been tested.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great thing, but in terms of the skills, have you done the comparison between somebody who's factory building the panels and somebody having to become a skilled builder, construction worker? How much sort of time saving is there in that loop?
I don't think there's a massive time saving in it. I think it's a better work environment. Don't forget, most of these large home builders don't employ builders. Everyone's self-employed. And if you don't work, you don't get paid. If you're ill, you don't get paid. And that's a real problem. And it has been for years. Moving them into a factory environment is attractive because they're on PAYE. They're getting paid. They don't have to worry about weather conditions. They're getting sick pay. It's really attractive, but it's a massive overhead for the employer. And that's why they all go out of business. So if we can flip that around into building on site, but in a weatherproof environment, if we can get to financing houses quicker and the cash flows quicker, get more people on PAYE, then we can invest in the skills and training. Because no self-employed builder is going to have enough spare capacity and funds to retrain themselves. No large home builder is going to want to pay to retrain people. So we're in a catch-22. So we need to get to a situation where it's commercially viable to put people on PAYE, invest in the skills and training, and there is a hell of a lot of transferable skills between off-site and on-site. Carpenters on-site are the same as carpenters off-site. It's just a matter of re-education and bringing that back in.
Yeah, well, I guess the premise of weatherproofing it does help with that. You're sort of trying to construct those properties, and the kind of weather we've been experiencing the last few years is extremely variable and not the best thing, because I think the other thing that was put to me quite early on is that you've got to make a property weather tight, and I think that's an issue quite quickly. And I kind of do look around in Sheffield and see some of the developments. I think people like Keep Motor are involved in a lot of house building around Sheffield, and they're traditional style buildings to all intents and purposes. But equally, looking at those to purchase as somebody on the market, you suddenly find out that they're really quite expensive. Yes, there are systems for buying it by shares and paying rent for the outstanding amount, but it's not really attacking that sort of thing. So if you can bring in the properties at that sort of build cost, I was wondering about one of the things that I had experience of sort of some people in Sheffield doing is self-build. So do you think that the system would adapt to a group of people becoming self-builders?
I think so. One of the interesting things, the demonstrator project that we did, we didn't use any builders for any of the construction. Yeah. So we used a fantastic team, Voltec, of local fabricators. They built the whole thing start to finish. We brought somebody in to do the screw pile foundations. We brought a steel fabricator in to assemble the components, and they had it up in 24 hours. Separate company comes in and does the cladding. They're not skilled builders or tradesmen. These are people applying what they know and their expertise they've got into a different sector. And really, to answer your question, it's about economies of scale. So if we attack the affordable housing market first, where we've got a huge shortage of good, safe properties for people that are on the housing list, if we can attack that first, funded through combined mayoral authorities, that will then give some confidence to the market about the durability and to the lenders and the insurance. And from then you can scale up, because, you know, Keep Mo, any of these large builders, it's all about volume and profit and quality. So if we can prove that through the affordable housing market, we're confident we can scale that up.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are lots of things that I could kind of trip over in that sort of scenario, where these big companies can purchase land and put it in their back pocket for the future, to call it land banking. So, again, that kind of blocks a lot of these initiatives on access. So I think the planning route has got to be looked at in detail to enable people. I mean, one of my crazy ideas was we got a lot of graduates coming out with debts who are looking for somewhere to live. Wouldn't it be great if they made self-build groups and actually built some housing? And what they'd need help with is finding their footprint to build on. I think that, they've targeted brownfield sites. I know locally to me there's a proposal for a 300-house sort of site to be built. And immediately alarm bells ring and on local people. You know, this has always been countryside in my memory. It's you can't do it. So the NIMBY attitudes that sort of still around are a tough thing to crack as well. So we're a small country. I mean, I think if you compare us to France with populations and you go, well, how many square feet do I have in the UK? And if I was in France, what would I get? Well, you'd probably buy yourself a chateau and do a bit of work and live in a very big house. So I think Holland, in my experience, has done quite a lot of experimental work in different ways of housing. Germany, again, has built complete towns. You come across, if you watch UK TV, things like the Hoof House, the system build that Germany does very well, to the extent that they actually send houses over here. But they are at a premium. And I think it's that balance between delivery and price.
I think that's part of the problem. They shouldn't be sending houses over here, should they? We've got the best manufacturing centre in the country, in the world, I would argue. Yeah. If Sheffield can't produce houses, nobody can. Yeah. But we're also really blessed here in South Yorkshire. We've received lots of funding over the last 12 months for new estates, for new housing.
Yes.
Homes England's putting a lot of money into the region. Yeah. I think we've got a fantastic team at the Combined Mayor Authority that are really keen to get the right kind of housing in, and yes, they're really supportive of the university. And all sides of business locally, and they really want to see us produce a national centre of excellence for construction, which will hopefully allay some of these fears. Public will be able to see that, yes, we're investing in lots of new housing, but we're also investing in the right kind of housing. And change is difficult, but I think change is difficult if we don't spread it out what we're actually doing, and we don't let people know what the plans are. So our job really is to solve that problem.
And there is a bit of a misnomer in the housing industry. And when we build buildings,
yes,
they usually have a design life.
Yes.
So one of the biggest problems we have in the UK is we have the oldest housing stock in Europe.
Yep.
So there's a point where that house becomes not economically viable.
Yes.
And we get, you know, pressure to upgrade houses. And it, you know, arguably on some housing, it doesn't stack up financially to spend, you know, £100,000 on a house that's worth, you know, yeah, not a lot at the end of its life. So we need to be looking at better ways to replace that existing housing stock, not always just building more, but replacing and making better quality homes. And what we don't want to be doing is creating a new problem for further down the line. So with a kit of parts approach, is you know, think of it as, you know, grown-ups Lego, if you think, some extent. Don't want to underplay it, but overplay it, really. But if you can disassemble and reconfigure and upgrade, and the house is designed for that, then you're not building in future problems further down the line. You can take parts away, increase it, decrease it, depending on what's going, move it out of the way, and it makes things a little much more adaptable. So we've got to think about our buildings in a different way than we used to.
Yes. Well, I think there's a problem. I'm getting to that time of life now where, you know, downsizing is the thing that sort of gets to be an appeal. Throw away all my rubbish over a lifetime and move into somewhere smaller. But you continue a bit blocked for that. So again, I think if you can make that more accessible on building, and quite often schemes that I've seen for what they call over 55s projects, aren't made to be sort of cheap and affordable. It's more like a smash and grab on people's pension pots, I think, is the way I see it. But that's maybe just me, I think. But what I think is probably an interesting thing is when you talked about hospitals, because there's a real cry out, I forget what, 17 hospitals, I think, that were proposed for rebuild in recent years, and they seem to be... It's like paddling in treacle, I think, is the effect. It just doesn't seem to happen. And I remember when the Hallamshire in Sheffield was built, it's terrible. It's an ugly, terrible slab of a building, but it's done great service for a long time. And I think that sort of balance needs to be looked at. And is that something where we could get manufacturing to a level to attack those kind of issues in a reasonable timescale?
It's funny you should say that, because back in 2019, I wrote the government's MMC, Modern Methods of Construction Strategy for rebuilding of what was Boris's 40 hospital programme at the time, and I laid out what needed to be done to deliver that. I'll be careful what I say now, but
yeah, we can't edit it out.
It's live in the name. Yeah. So we showed them what they would need to do that, and now I'm being very diplomatic by saying they are starting to implement some of that thinking now, and there's some good stuff going to come out of it. It's just taken an awful longer than we hoped originally.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's like a lot of things. I mean, if we go into the rural environment, there are lots of demands for housing in rural areas, but they don't want to build any more housing than they've already got, which is kind of self-defeating, I think. And when they do sort of propose a big boost in housing in an area, all of a sudden we run into infrastructure problems, tying into our ancient sort of sewerage systems and the kind of problems that are splashing on the papers and on our beaches all the time are really sort of highlighting just how we're leaning on that Victorian era of sort of building and development. So how do we sort of break out of those things, the infrastructure level? Because we've got privatised water, so they're not really going to come in with a huge investment that's not going to pay them back in a short time, I think.
I think there's been a change probably over the last 2 or 3 years, and certainly from the research point of view. Most of the research funding, in fact all of the research funded now, is through mission challenges, and those mission challenges are all linked to prosperity and economic growth. So in the construction sector now, there's a programme that's just been announced in the last 6 to 8 months for a national construction delivery. Industrialised construction is the delivery mode for that, and that's looking at producing centres up and down the country that's all aligned, that's all looking at the same problems, and then bringing in these large partners for infrastructure. So rather than a developer going off and buying a site and then coming across these problems, they're in at the fundamental design stage. So we look at the entire business case, that area, what's the infrastructure cost, what's the payback? And it depends which way you look at it. I mean, if you need new infrastructure, that's new jobs. And that's new jobs, and that's new cities, and that's new towns, and new wealth creation. Yeah. And ultimately, that's what we need if we're going to move forward.
Mm. I think it can be a driver of the kind of growth that we want, because I think stagnation is one of those things. And quite often, I talk about Sheffield steel industry. And in my younger days, if you went down to Savile Street at certain times of the day, it'd be totally awash with people coming in to work or coming out of work on the shift systems. It was a really big employer. But later on, looking at it, we diversified more and more into special steels. So you'll find that there are specialist steel sort of makers. And I believe that we're kind of still keeping up quite a tonnage output of steel. But we don't recognise that anymore. Where sort of made in Sheffield was something that a sort of matter for pride. It's kind of, well, no, you know, it's all gone to Asia or somewhere for manufacture now. So in housing, it's a fundamental sort of need. You know, it's, if you look at the hierarchy of needs, it's accommodation, shelter's pretty high on your agenda. So it's how we can sort of move it forward. I think it looks like a great system, and I think a proof of concept would be good, and making that accessible would be good. I think a lot of the time, generally speaking, if you're not involved and you're not interested, you'll walk past a lot of developments and not realise that there are. I know, local to me, there have been several bungalows that have been made larger by using panels on the outside of the building, deconstructing the stonework or the brickwork that was there to give you extra space. So there is the technology around, and there are some people who are specialising in it and making a good sort of proposal and a good living, presumably, out of it. But it's really where we can look at where the key investment areas would be. And that's why I said about hospitals. I think for me, that's one where a lot of people would stand up and applaud, especially if you said, look, this is a 7-year programme if you do this building technique, but this could be a 2-year building programme if you do that technique. And actually sell people on the ideas. Because, if you look at the motor neuron centre that was built up in Leeds, it's a lovely looking building. It's custom built for the work it's doing. The hospitals can be the same. Whereas, look at our Northern General in Sheffield, and it's an ancient Victorian heart to a mixture of sort of temporary buildings, temporary accommodations, things that are moved around that aren't reusable. So it tends to be you knock it together in wood, timber, and then knock it down, and inherent dangers that we found previously, like asbestos. You know, it was a great building material, had a great role to play, but then we realised the drawbacks of it. So a lot of people are unhappy. And again, if you're looking at fitting your kitchen with a nice new sort of stone worktop, we're finding that's a problem. And that was sort of relevant to me because I remember my grandfather was what they called a saddle grinder. And he had the same problem that when he was grinding blades, the dust from the wheel got on his lungs, and that was why he ended up having to finish work, apart from being blown through the roof and three stories when his grinding wheel broke. But those kind of things are around. So the systems are great. I think if we can tap into the skill sets or develop the skill sets to sort of make it happy, then it looks like a great step forward.
If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. This week is a special edition. So if you've heard PG's voice, our Paul Gregory, he's been talking to Richard Crosbay, who's Chief Executive of Seismic Group, and Professor Ben Hughes, who's Professor of Energy Engineering at the University of Sheffield. We've been talking about construction, housing delivery, factoring a box system. We're going to play a rather cool bit of music. I think this is Ben's choice. It's a live version. And when we come back in, I'd like to talk a bit about sustainability and politics versus, you know, what were the other house builders probably not very keen on you, maybe, changing it all. Let's see.
She needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. And brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around. Where, I know. Our house in the middle of our streets. Our house in the middle of our. Well, our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. And our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows.
lights are down and a mess is not allowed. Then she sends the kids to school, sees them off with a small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways, ways. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest rapper in show business today, CJ Froman. When we would have such a very good time, such a fine time, such a happy time. And I remember how we played, simply wasted their way. Then we'd say, nothing would come between us, no, two dreamers, that's right. And father wears his Sunday best, mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs, the sister's sighing in her sleep. Oh, father's got a day to keep, he can't hang around.
Fantastic there. Our House Live by Madness. And that was Ben Hughes' choice for the Life Science Radio Show today, talking about construction and housing delivery in a box. We've also got Richard Crosby here, from Chief Executive of Seismic. We can talk about all sorts. If you missed the first bit, you can download the podcast and catch up later and maybe even share it around. For my background, I'm interested in the sustainability aspects of your system, you know, carbon, air quality, and sustainability in the terms of how the materials are made and recycled. Do you want to talk a bit about that and maybe then about politics and funding? And
well, I'm definitely not going to talk about politics because I'm on PAYE as well, which, so you'll be doing that bit. Again, the light gauge steel is recyclable. That's why I went down that route. There are problems with it. We accept that. But what we're trying to show is that you can take a material that doesn't need to be craned in. You can self-build with it. You can put it together rapidly. You can actually manufacture it really, really cheaply. And the way in which it's manufactured, it comes on a roll. You put it through a machine. You use a CAD model to design the building, and out pops out your framework. And you can do all that on site. Which is the new, you're not waiting for a factory to deliver, you're not waiting for a wagon to come down the motorway that's stuck in a jam for 24 hours. And that was really the purpose of the demonstrator. As a university, we don't recommend or endorse any particular method of doing it. What we'd say is we are an enabler. You come to us, we'll test it, we'll benchmark it against every other systems out there, its credentials for carbon, its credentials for life cycle, and we give an informed choice, really, at the end of the day. And it will come down to cost for Seismic and other big companies like that, but for us as a university, we're here to show these are all the different methods, get hands-on with them. Even if you're a member of the public and you want to come and have a look, get hands-on, have a look, see what we can do.
So when you work with the South Yorkshire Mayor Combined Authority and you did this project, when exactly was that? Recently?
We're really fortunate, and I know I could say anything, but we are really fortunate in Sheffield because here in Sheffield we have got a fantastic Combined Mayor Authority, but more than that, they're really engaged with the university, which a lot of them are not. So they've worked closely with both universities for a number of years. They did the South Yorkshire Sustainability Centre 4 or 5 years ago. I've been working with them for the last 12 to 18 months. And without their funding, we wouldn't be able to get this demonstrator up. So the bigger picture for us is we want a national centre of excellence for construction. We want to co-fund it with the Combined Mayoral Authority, with the university partners and industry partners. And that's really what the demonstrator was for. It's to say, look, we can do it at a small scale. This is one project. We can turn out 30 or 40 different projects a year if we had the infrastructure to do it.
So exactly where is it then at AMRC? I know it's off Sheffield Parkway, so if anybody wants to go and look at it, is it accessible to the public?
I'm going to get shot, but I'm going to say yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's currently on a piece of land at the back of Factory 2050. You may have seen the runway park plan where we're looking for co-investors to come and put research centres on there. To the right-hand side of our latest build, which is the Energy Innovation Centre, there's a strip of land there, and you'll see it as you come up. It's a great big tented building, and within it you'll see a steel frame building clad by some great partners from Vunderhaus. You're welcome to come and have a walk around.
Wow. Describe what it looks like to somebody who's listening.
If you were coming off the motorway and looking down, you'd see something that looks like a set of porta cabins with a huge big tent roof on it. It's a retractable roof. The idea is that you build your foundations through screw piles, you build your frame over in a nice weatherproof. Once you've got it weatherproof, the roof tracks across to the next one, you start building your next property up, and then the roof continually tracks. So every time you finish one and it's watertight and you finance it, you move on to the next and to the next.
So how many have you built there then, a couple?
We've got two. We've got one that's up and clad, and which is a one-bedroom bungalow. And behind that is a three-bedroom semi-detached. We did that because that's what the Combined Mayor Authority, that's wanted. Their biggest demand.
They wanted to see.
Yeah, one beds and three beds.
And what was the outcome of that then? What was the reaction across South Yorkshire as well? It's a first, I guess, for our region.
It's been a positive reaction. I mean, there's two things. Firstly, they were impressed with the speed of the build. You know, to build something in 7 days without a traditional builder on site is one thing. But the second thing is the cost. So a one-bed bungalow fully clad for less than £20,000 is a massive cost saving.
PG is interested now, and I'm sure a lot of people will be. Yeah, what about
25. Joking.
So what about planning law then? Apart, what the council, you know, if you built it in, well, I think it's technically in Rotherham you built it, but what's the local authorities, planning authorities' view on such construction? Because they will have a say in how something looks and where it can be built.
It all conforms to the standard planning regulations. There is a lot of changes going through planning that probably Richard knows more about than me, but it does all conform. For us at the moment, it's a temporary structure, so we don't fall under those regulations, but it follows the standard strength, it follows the standard construction method. Screw piles are used all over the place. Not so much residential, it's normally concrete into the ground, but this is a much, much cleaner, sustainable way of doing it.
We've been doing this quite a while now, and we find that actually planners are more interested in what it looks like at the end, and what the impact it's going to be on the surroundings and how it's built. The method is actually more of a supportive thing to a lot of people because there's less traffic in and out with deliveries and things like that. There's a fewer deliveries because everything's coming in a couple of parts and put together, so it has a less impact on the wider area, which they like. But generally planners just like want to know what it's going to look like at the end, and we can make it adaptable enough to look like anything that's traditional, so you wouldn't know the difference, quite frankly, in terms of things being traditional, but it would perform better.
Very interesting. So where's the next area going to go to bigger? Is it going to be in South Yorkshire or somewhere else?
So the next stage of the project is we've got a couple of other big companies want to come and test their system. So we've produced our own factory in a box, and of course everybody emails in and says, well, I've got a better one. Well, come and show me. So we've got two other big companies putting their own systems on place over the summer. We'll demonstrate and test those and benchmark them against our own. We're then trying to put together a business case now to get some funding for a huge national infrastructure centre in Sheffield, where we can let all the local supply chain come together, test their products in this new way of building, hopefully get them certified and get them access to that pipeline that's coming in South Yorkshire, and from there we can scale it up nationally. That's the grand plan.
Wow, and would that be AMRC?
AMRC, University of Sheffield, yeah.
Wow, and what's the time frame for that?
Well, 18 months.
18 months,
I think,
yeah.
That's a safe bet. I think anything longer than 18 months, if you look at the national housing crisis, if it takes 18 months to put that building up, how long is it going to take to start putting houses on fields?
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
Well, as PG's already said, this is about convincing the money men. It's winning the hearts and minds of how we do this. The technology is already there in lots of different pockets all over the place. Has been for some time. Pre-war has always been mentioned before, but we've moved on. Technology's moved on, got better and better. So, as we said before, if we can test, and the AMRC have got all that facility to do that, all this testing, certify it, and then hopefully we can get everybody else to buy into it and win the hearts and minds to start delivering things properly at scale. This is a global problem, by the way. The opportunities are not just Sheffield. This goes... it's not political, it's a global issue.
And has anybody been ahead of the curve in Europe?
There's a lot of talk about certain pockets, particularly in Scandinavia, in terms of timber and things like that. But I generally believe the UK is leading the way in doing this, as we often are. And even if we're not manufacturing everything, we'll certainly be outsourcing and selling services to the world. I'm already working in various other countries around the world at the moment, licensing our patented systems to show them, because they've often got bigger problems than we have. But you know, we are world leaders in the UK, particularly Sheffield.
When you talk about the actual building of these houses, what about the energy requirements for the actual, you know, big thing everybody's thinking about, heat pumps and where's your water coming from and stuff like that? How are you dealing with that aspect of it? It's not just building the actual box, is it, the frame?
I suppose that's one of our unique selling points at the University of Sheffield. If you go up, those listeners that have been up to the site, you'll find, yes, there's a factory, 2050 at the front, well-known, world-renowned for manufacturing. But if you look behind that, there's four other fantastic research centres, one in materials, one in buried infrastructure, and one in energy innovation. So any technology that you're seeing, whether it's underground buried infrastructure, whether it's a heat pump, whether it's a biomass, all of that has got a test house already in Sheffield. So by having a demonstration site next door, we can plug in all four into one building. So rather than having to travel to Watford to look at a heat pump centre and then come back, you can have everything on your doorstep. So there's only Sheffield that can do that. So when they're making these decisions about a national infrastructure centre, you can put it wherever you like, but you're still going to need input from Sheffield. So it makes much more sense. And everybody knows if you want something doing properly, you do it here in Sheffield. So that's our big pitch.
Indeed, we were talking earlier about Forge Masters. It's a massive site, and people seem to think they don't make anything, but they're actually very unique, aren't they, in the whole, on the whole country. I was asking Richard Crosby if he was involved in the building of the, what I would call, not terrapins, but the cabins there for the staff, and you said no, but it's a similar thing, isn't it, to put something up quickly.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you see what things that can be done, thrown up temporary, but the only difference is really the specification. We go for a permanent specification, but it goes up as fast or can be disassembled in a temporary solution. In fact, we did actually look a little while ago at Forge Masters because we have a patented connection system which allows everything to go together. Not dissimilar to the ISO fixing on a shipping container, it locks everything together, lines it and gets the things right. And we've been looking to Sheffield Forge Masters to cast those rather than have them welded at the moment. But as we get to bigger volumes, then we can start really looking at the casting and bring some more work back to Sheffield.
Interesting. Can I just ask you, Richard, how did you get in touch with Professor Ben Hughes then? Or did he find you, or did the South Yorkshire Mayor of Combined Authority join you together?
Okay. Fan mail, wasn't it?
Was it fan mail?
Write me a letter or something, wouldn't it? It will have been.
But you know, you just, I always find it amazing when you're into innovation. How did you decide, you know what, we're onto something here?
I think maybe 12 months ago, we really started pushing this idea forward of a construction centre and working with the Combined Mayoral Authority. And around about the same time, another group were lobbying the government for funding to do something similar. So we had some exploratory talks in that about, okay, well, can we bring this together? And obviously, there's always some tension in that because they want to take it one place and we're definitely having it in Sheffield. That's how the conversation
goes. I like it.
And through those meetings, we met Rich, and I wanted to build the demonstrator and I wanted to use a proven system. So it made sense to go with seismic. If they've got the track record of doing one at the building research establishment in Watford and they've done the schools programme, you'd really... What we do at Sheffield is we try and work best with best. That's what we always try and do. So it made sense for us to come together.
And I wanted it in Yorkshire because I'm a Yorkshireman.
Excellent. I think you're Wakefield based. I asked Chris this question. He said you also worked for the MOD. Did you do the seismic work with seismic, putting the structure up for that, or some of the residential side of it for the people working there?
No, not involved in that. We're hoping to get involved in that.
I shouldn't have said that in the future.
But we're not involved at the moment. Who knows what's going to come through the government stuff that they're pushing and driving at the moment, because there's not, as much as people talk about all buildings are different, therefore they can't be manufactured, they are more similar or have very similar common components than you might think, and they are 100% manufacturable at some point or to some scale. And with the amount of volume of building work that needs to be done in the wider Sheffield Combined Authority, what we're hoping to do is harness that pipeline and turn that into a whole ecosystem of companies within the region that can manufacture for the rest of the UK, if not globally.
And I think on the MOD, so it's a bit like we said earlier, the accommodation for military families now is coming to the end of its natural life. So the pipeline of new builds for military accommodation is almost as big as the affordable housing pipeline. So they've got a huge programme of building that needs to be done. They're obviously looking at these kind of solutions to say we need them even quicker. So it makes sense if we can transfer those skills across.
We went to a talk recently with the Master Cutler. It was fantastic. And, you know, the strapline made in Sheffield really is made in Sheffield. And it's also the strapline of Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM as well, made in Sheffield, made by you. We won't play that, but we are coming to the end of the show. Anything else you want to say before we play Richard's choice of track?
I think we've covered all the bases.
Come back and see us and tell us how you're getting on in the future, I would say. So massive thanks to Richard Crosway, Chief Executive of Seismic Group, and Professor Ben Hughes, Professor of Energy Engineering at the University of Sheffield, for joining us today. It has been amazing. I am going to go down to AMRC and have a look now. I'm sure a lot of the people might be. You've chosen a track to play out with. Why have you chosen it, Richard?
This is really for my wife.
Because
we've been married for about as long as I've been obsessed with the whole world of industrialised construction and this, that and the other. So this is a thank you for putting up with me.
Oh, Nothing Else Matters by Metallica from 1991. Fantastic. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Nothing else.